Andrea, did you want us to start, or did you want to start with the project assumptions?
I suspect that given we've got everyone into acquisition costs mode, it may be as well to carry on.
Great. So hopefully we've been listening intently to the discussion on revenue recognition, and we think that we've addressed many of the points that have been raised. But obviously, we will continue that discussion. So Emily will take us through our paper.
So the purpose of this meeting is to ask the boards to determine the accounting for acquisition costs for insurance contracts. There are some specific issues related to the modified approach and presentation, but the staff is not asking the boards to make any decisions regarding those issues at this meeting. The modified approach and presentation will be brought in future meetings. The ISB's exposure draft and the FASB's discussion paper propose that at initial recognition of a contract, an insurer would include incremental acquisition costs in the fulfillment cash flows of the contract and expense non-incremental acquisition costs as incurred. The boards also propose that an insurer would identify incremental acquisition costs at the individual contract level. While the staff would like to be consistent with other projects, the insurance contracts model is a liability measurement model versus a cost deferral model. Based on that and feedback received from stakeholders through comment letters and other outreach activities, the staff considered four alternatives for which acquisition costs to include in contractual cash flows in the initial measurement of contract. Alternative one, as proposed, acquisition costs included would be those that are direct and incremental at the individual contract level. Alternative two, acquisition costs that are direct and incremental at the portfolio level for contracts issued. Some have indicated that this alternative may be interpreted as including only costs that are both direct and incremental, which would limit the costs more than the staff intended. Therefore, the staff would like to clarify that the intent was for this alternative to include acquisition costs for contracts issued that are direct, which would include those costs that are incremental and direct. The third alternative, acquisition costs that are directly related to the successful acquisition of new and renewal insurance contracts, would be consistent with the FASB's accounting standards update issued in October 2010. The fourth alternative, acquisition costs that are not only direct and incremental, but also recoverable for contracts issued. The staff recommendation, based on the analysis of those alternatives, is for contracts issued that some acquisition costs should be included in the initial measurement of insurance contracts, while those acquisition costs not included should be expensed as incurred. The acquisition costs to be included, the staff recommend for the contractual cash flows for contracts issued should be limited to those that are direct, including those that are incremental and direct at the portfolio level for the underwriting, policy issuance and processing, medical and inspection, and Salesforce contract selling functions. The reason the staff recommend moving to the measurement at the portfolio level is to include costs for different distribution systems, whether through external agents, internal workforce, or direct response advertising. The reason to include for direct is to limit the extent of the types of costs that could be included to those where there is direct interaction with the policyholder, such as the Salesforce contract selling, where there is handling of the application, such as the underwriting and medical and inspection, which would occur before contract issuance, and where there is handling of the policy for other policy issuance costs. This would exclude step variable costs that would be allocated, such as occupancy costs, administrative costs, and other general overhead. The reason for successful is to be consistent with other projects, contracts issued, and to effectively meet the recoverability criteria as the composite or residual margin could not be negative. Are there any questions on these alternatives? Staff recommendation.
Okay, thanks, Emily. Leslie, shall we take this one first this time?
Sure.
Okay, let me ask, let's go to the phones this time first as we came into London the last few times. Can I go to Warren first?
But Steve, can I ask a question beforehand? Because I it's not clear to me what the staff recommendation is. That means the alternative 1, 2, 4. What is the staff recommendation?
The staff recommendation is alternative 2, that it would be acquisition costs at the portfolio. It would be cost for acquiring the contract at the portfolio level for successful contracts, those that are direct, which includes incremental and direct, as Emily clarified, for the different functions that are listed.
Thank you.
Could I ask a question before you start, Stephen?
Sure, go ahead.
John, when you say portfolio level, talking staff, and successful, what does that mean? I thought if you said portfolio level, you'd be looking at what you, well, I'm not sure what it means. I can't, if it's successful, it has to be individual. That's how you'd know it's successful. But you bring in the word portfolio, and so I'm kind of lost as to what that's doing. If you could just help me understand it, I'd appreciate it.
Yep, thanks, John. So just to take a little bit of a step back, the reason for the portfolio is that there was a lot of comments received that if it's incremental at the individual contract level, the issue is in regards to the main distribution systems that insurance companies use, which are both the external agents. Many companies also have internal, their own internal workforce when they don't have the external agents or sort of a captive agency that would be considered their own workforce. And then there's also direct response advertising. And so those would not have been captured if we did it at the individual contract level. The other reason for going to a portfolio level is that some of the costs are not directly linked to an individual contract. So things such as the medical and inspection or policy issuance. And to your point, how do you actually link those? And the reason, the way that companies, I guess, essentially would link those is to determine how much of those costs, how many of the contracts that they actually touch or deal with, what the rate is for successful contracts. So the reason to move to portfolio is to capture all the distribution systems and to alleviate the issue with not linking directly to an individual contract. But then the reason for saying that it should be successful, which again is a little bit of an allocation for some of the different processes such as underwriting, policy issuance, and medical and inspection, is to stay consistent with the other models in regards to having it be for successful contracts and also to meet the criteria that the boards have decided on in the past of having it be recoverable. And the reason why it's recoverable is that there cannot be a negative residual or composite margin. So implicitly, you can only include those acquisition costs that would be recoverable.
So just to feed it back, I've got an internal workforce. I would, given what they're doing, call that their activity direct and then look at all the contracts they touch, those that are successful, those that aren't, and allocate. Is that what you're telling me?
We would not prescribe the method for them to be able to do that. That is one method, probably the predominant method, that companies might approach it. We would not, I mean, if they want to track specifically to the successful contracts and can do that with their systems, that would be great. But I think that the way you described it, John, is probably the way that they would most likely do that.
We've got a number of further questions on this point here. If we could... Is that okay, Philippe?
I'm just trying to understand it. That's all. That's fine.
That's fine. I think we've got more questions here along similar lines. So Philippe, then Pat, and then Elke. Sorry.
I'm also trying to understand. If this Salesforce is selling two types of products, insurance contracts and other contracts that do not qualify as insurance contracts. Okay. So in one case, we will have a portfolio approach when it is insurance contract. If the contract doesn't qualify, then you have to move for exactly the same business model, the same distribution channel, to a contract-by-contract approach. Does it make sense?
I mean, I think that that's an overall general question, Philippe. I think in the insurance where we're at a cash flow model in general, and I think also it does potentially make sense, and I also think that we're dealing with an industry, so the insurance industry, where there are a lot of upfront costs that do need to be considered. I can't speak to all of the other industries, but obviously revenue recognition has a wide variety and would need to be able to address all of those different ones. So we're just addressing the insurance, but trying to stay consistent as possible.
Well, as I don't think we are on the ISB side dealing with the industry. We are dealing with contracts. We are measuring cash flows for those contracts, and seems to be difficult to accept. I'm not against the model for insurance contracts. It's fine. I'm just saying that if you move a little bit and sell another product that is the same industry, but it's not an insurance contract, then you get a different answer accounting-wise. And I have some difficulties to understand the logics here. Yeah.
Thanks, Pat.
Jennifer, along the same lines of trying to understand the rationale for the recommendation of successful versus unsuccessful, you used the phrase, and you used it a few times here, of trying to stay consistent with other theories and other models for the other projects we have, and you also introduced the notion of recoverability. And I'm just wondering, if that's the case, if in fact we're articulating or saying that the unit of account here is the portfolio level, and part of the rationale for that is that this is a business that's based on the law of large numbers. You don't originate a contract. You originate portfolios of contracts, right? So it seems to my mind that you could and probably should have a different outcome if you're looking at it on a portfolio basis and look at the incremental costs of originating the portfolio, which might mean that you're looking at some contracts that actually weren't actually written. So that's where I'm having a little bit of problem, where we're saying we're trying to be consistent with other projects, but in fact, if you're using a different unit of account, I'm not sure that you really can be. So that's the unique nature of insurance is the thing I'm struggling with here. So if you could address that in any of your comments or responses to the other board members, that would help me make up my mind.
Hey, Steve, you want to stick with the phones first?
Yeah, we just got a couple more questions here, and then I'll come to the phones for your questions. Elka next.
I think I'm
Thanks.
Probably... my concerns or my confusion here is probably along the lines of what John and what Pat had addressed. I understand and I support the idea that basically we switch to looking at the portfolio level because that obviously helps us to put a level playing field for different distribution channels. Having said so, I am struggling and I don't understand why we are focusing on successful contracts and how that should work for a portfolio where I've indefinitely got efforts to build up that portfolio and I can't really distinguish whether it's successful or unsuccessful contracts. And it might be helpful to remind us we are not talking about a cost deferral here. We are talking about one leg of measuring cash flows, which are cash outflows within the entire portfolio. The other one I am wondering is, I think we have agreed that incremental is a fairly narrow definition of cost. So I'm wondering, and I think, Peg, I was waiting for you to repeat that you're getting confused what means direct and incremental. And I would question whether we really need direct and incremental or whether incremental cost is sufficient here.
Well, I think that the staff have clarified that it is both, but I think we need to address the question, because I noticed that David and Amaro earlier, when they gave their comments, they said they supported incremental only.
Me too.
Yeah. Paul?
I get confused by direct and incremental.
Okay.
My question is for Jennifer. I just want to follow up on John's question. If you've got a workforce and they spent time on soliciting business, half of it was successful, half of their effort did not result in a contract, would 100% of the cost be capitalized or
50%?
50% I don't care whether we're tracing or allocating. Just is it 100% or 50%?
It would be 50%.
Thank you.
Okay. PK, you wanted to ask a question?
I just wanted to understand the staff recommendation, and I think a lot of people have made the comments. The clear outcome of this from moving from a contract to a portfolio is that more cost would be potentially deferred, or the residual margin will come down in the IASB's thing because more cost would be qualified for to be capitalized. I do have some reservations for that. By definition, a portfolio is a successful contract in my mind. So I don't understand why, what is the argument between a contract and a portfolio, because portfolio is a accumulation of successful contracts. The staff's idea about payroll and the costing of the employee workforce within the company, all this the arguments and discussion will never get us to any cross-cutting issue with the revenue recognition, because I think we are entirely on a different path and a different model here. Including travel cost, I understand, can be capitalized under this method. And I don't understand, if you are making that distinction, why software, which is a part of your example, will not be eligible for capitalization. And I just don't get that. So I want to get more clarity on this, because more analysis is needed why we want to go at a portfolio level. I do understand the intention, because we are measuring everything at a portfolio level. So does the acquisition cost. But I think there's a lot of room for creativity here.
Okay, thanks, PK. Let me go through the rest of you on the phone. Warren?
Thanks, Fred. So I'll go back to the question you asked me initially, and that is, what's my position on the staff paper? I support the staff recommendation in moving the unit of account to the portfolio level. I think many constituents in the comment letters and outreach raised with us the issue of an inconsistent unit of account for acquisition costs when you look at the basic measurement model that we've developed. And in that respect, we've identified as the unit of account the portfolio. So I think on grounds of consistency, I think it's appropriate. I also think the explanation that Jennifer gave John in response to his question about the nature of certain costs that would be excluded if you retained the proposal in the exposure draft at the contract level, and that seems to be anomalous. In relation to whether we should only be focusing on successful contract acquisitions or both successful and unsuccessful, I don't think, I heard Jennifer say, and also the general introduction to the paper comment made that this recommendation is in part based on being consistent with other models, or with other approaches we're developing in our documents, and perhaps with other literature. I don't think we need to focus on that that perspective because we are developing a particular model for insurance contracts. It's a model which focuses on the measurement of the insurance liability, the measurements taking place on the basis of all of the cash flows, both inflows and outflows at a contract level, and then measured at a portfolio level. If we shift the unit of account to a portfolio level, bearing in mind what I said about the nature of the model we're developing, it seems inconsistent then to just focus on successful contracts, since the amounts that are paid for the acquisition effort in relation to the insurance liabilities that we ultimately recognise includes costs that are related to both successful and unsuccessful efforts and certainly would be included in the pricing. So I disagree with that aspect of the staff recommendation, but certainly strongly support the recommendation that we move from the contract level to the portfolio level.
Okay, thanks, Warren. Tatsumi?
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, okay, so I also have the same points as Warren, I think. To shift to the portfolio level is I support it. Let's say successful and non-successful, I have trouble with that because in this case, insurance contract, I think, the insurers try to collect the money that which covers the also non-successful effort to obtain a contract, I think. So and the nature of the calculation of this accounting for insurance liabilities, I think once we focus on portfolio level, I think that we should not exclude non-successful cost expense, I think. As I said, the reason is, say, premiums which received for insurance contract, I understand it include some non-successful cost recovery notion is inside the premium, I think. But, in contrast with this notion, I have a trouble in revenue recognition acquisition cost treatment. The reason why is in the case of construction contract which is related to the site A and some construction contract in a different project, I think that in case of revenue recognition, it might be very difficult to collect other cost which failed. That means that non-successful cost is it not clear to me to be covered by a different contract. But in case of insurance contract, I think that they just focus on selling the same product in a sales by using the sales channel. So in that case, the product which they are selling is very clear and sales channel is very clear. They can make an estimation of the cost. So, and they know that successful ratio. So I think that the insurance premium includes the non-successful cost recovery notion. So I think that I do not support the just focus on the successful cost should be recognized as acquisition cost.
Thanks, Satsumi. John, do you want to add anything to what you said earlier?
I was asking a question earlier, trying to understand.
I called you again.
Now you want me to speak?
All right, just giving you another opportunity to come in, because I know you only asked a question earlier.
Okay. I guess I support portfolio. But the reason I'm supporting it is I thought that when we talked about these contracts, staff had told us it would be virtually impossible to do all of this on an individual basis. So we had to look at large numbers and that sort of thing. I don't support the unsuccessful that Tatsumi, I guess Warren, maybe others are supporting. I'm just having a hard time with it in that anyone in pricing a contract is pricing it to make a profit. And that profit would include clearly all of these costs, but all of its overhead as well. And so I don't know where we stop. I don't know why this is special and why it should be something that goes against the contract or portfolio of contracts at inception. Now, maybe I could be convinced if I don't understand what we're doing, but it seems foreign to me to include those when I wouldn't do it on an individual basis. And I thought what we were trying to do with insurance was to really, even though we couldn't do it individually, but get to an answer that would be kind of that if we could do it. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thanks. I'm going to turn it over to the FASB before we vote, and we'll hear their discussion. But just, Leslie, the question B of the staff, it seems to me that there are a number of sub-questions in there. So I wonder whether we should ask, firstly, whether board members support looking at this on a portfolio level. Secondly, whether they would want direct and incremental, which is the staff recommendation, or incremental only. Thirdly, whether it's the successful only, which is the staff recommendation, or whether it's all the costs associated with that portfolio, because I think those three separate issues, I think we ought to address those individually. And then lastly, that part C of the question, whether we need the guidance on top of that. So that's what I would propose we do. Can I turn it over to the FASB now, as we've had a long go at this, and we've got some more comments.
Steve, can I just...
You go ahead, Jennifer, Steve, and then I've got Paul that wants to make some comments here.
Yep, and I appreciate you jumping in, because I agree with you. Those are the three points, and I think we are missing one of those as people are talking. I think there was a couple questions, though, that just wanted to address the reason for the direct and incremental and direct. There could be an interpretation if you just had incremental, that would include anything above, that would include any costs such as the fact that an underwriter needs rental space, needs IT, needs electricity, and it would be those incremental costs. Some have, in the industry, have interpreted incremental to include those costs. So that was the staff's intent, to include the word direct to eliminate some of those other costs that could be in there, and that was the reason for both of the words, for that piece of it. So just wanted to clarify how industry in the past has interpreted that.
Jennifer, I thought you changed the recommendation to not direct and incremental, but just to the words direct. And I thought the reason you changed that recommendation to just direct was for another reason besides what you just described. If we said direct and incremental, and we thought about sales force salaries or underwriting salaries of the underwriting force that are internal, and you said it was direct and incremental, and that underwriting sales force underwrote two different portfolios of contracts, I'm not saying that that's possible, but if they did, it would not meet the definition of direct and incremental, but it would meet the definition of direct. Because if it was direct and incremental, that sales force, that underwriting salaried force would not be incremental to one portfolio, because it works to two portfolios. But if you said it was just direct, you could allocate that sales force, the underwriting salaries amongst the two portfolios because they're directly related to obtaining contracts in those two portfolios. So I thought the move to direct was to address that issue too, rather than, that's why you moved off just direct and incremental.
Yes. I mean, that is a great point, Tom. That is also one of the reasons to move away from that. The other reason for the successful and unsuccessful split, just to clarify why the staff recommended that, was the example that was given that if you have a company that looks at all the exact same applications, one is successful 70% of the time and one is successful 30% of the time, but they have all of the same costs. If you include the underwriting and the medical and inspection and all of the costs for both of those companies, while we agree with Pat's point that it is a pooling of risks and you have to look at 1,000 applications to write 700 applications, 700 policies, that two companies that have different success rates, if you include successful and unsuccessful, would have the exact same accounting, and some did not think that that made sense. So, Steve, I just wanted to clarify those points that were questioned.
Yeah. Okay, we've got Paul and Wade who haven't spoken yet who want to, and Elka wants to come back on a point as well. Can we do this and then we'll hand it over to the FASB?
I'll be very brief. My point is we have a definition of portfolio in the glossary. It's basically a business model approach. It says that are a group of policies that are managed together. And I've inquired of the staff, and some life insurance companies will say, well, we have one portfolio.
And hello, this is Tatsumi again. Can I talk to Rudy Marks, please?
Tatsumi, can you put yourself on mute?
Oh, sorry.
So
because
one life
I can't
insurance
see
company.
You. I can't see you.
No, you're not on mute yet. Go ahead, Paul.
Some life insurance companies will have one portfolio. Others will have 200 portfolios. The same situation. You know, it may be a global company, but it depends on how they manage their business. We are going to get dramatically different answers than depending on simply what their business model is for running their portfolios, and that troubles me.
Remember, the board decided to account for acquisition costs at country level. One of the reasons is for the onerous test. Peter, I'm not sure whether my memory is right. If it is right, if the board changed our mind based on portfolio, how can we do the onerous test in the future?
Sorry, yeah.
As you address me directly, I better answer, I suppose. I think what we proposed in the ED was that the onerous test, where you need it, would be done at the cohort level rather than directly at the individual contract level. That's an issue that came up in the comment letters as well. Clearly, we need to look at that issue. And the issue there really was to do with the runoff pattern, because you're trying to look at the runoff of the this is in the modified approach. If you're looking at the runoff of the premium over the life of the contract, somehow you have to do some of that testing, probably at a cohort level or a contract type level. So in some cases, there may be parts of the measurement that you do initially at the portfolio level that you then need to push down to cohort.
Okay, last word, Elka.
We've been talking about cross-cutting issues about an hour ago on revenue recognition. I just want to remind us that there we've decided to go for incremental cost, not for direct and incremental. And I don't see a reason why we should go for direct and incremental here if we don't do so on RevRec.
Okay. Leslie, over to you.
Okay. Can I ask
a question? Jennifer, my question is if we were to go down the same path we did in revenue, the definition of incremental, would you get a different answer if this was at the contract level or the portfolio level?
Yep.
Yes.
Why do you? Can you explain to me why you get it?
Yep. So the staff believes that you would get a different answer if it's incremental at the contract level, that is only for successful contracts, and it would be only those costs that are incremental to selling that specific contract. So, you know, those costs such as commissions and bonuses for that contract. Once we move to the portfolio level, that is where we said, well, if you move to the portfolio level, now all of a sudden, if you just have incremental, incremental can include those costs for, you know, on top of, you know, it can include rent, it can include general overhead, it can include any of the incremental costs. Therefore, that's why we said, let's do,
I don't
the
think,
word direct.
Don't, I just, I don't think that's consistent with the definition of incremental that we concluded in revenue.
Correct.
So that's why I asked my question that way. I think when I read alternative one, I read that as incremental. When I read alternative two, I read it as direct. I think changing the unit of account is mixing it up. I do not think rent and other things meets the definition of incremental as we've done it in revenue. Now, you might disagree with that, but that's why I asked the question. If we're trying to, like Elke said, align what we did earlier today with this project, and we go with incremental, I personally don't think you did a different answer between portfolio and contract.
And if that's the case, that is fine. That would be the staff's recommendation would be to include implementation guidance, so that would be clarified, because in general, we know how the industry has interpreted incremental in the past, and what they would think would potentially be included. So we are, I believe, all the staff would be fine with just the incremental. What we are trying to prevent is it going beyond what we believe the board intended.
Okay, I understand. Okay.
Russ, and Jennifer, I believe there's a difference if you say incremental at the individual contract level or incremental at the portfolio level in the following sense. If I pay my sales force in salaries at the individual contract level and that sales force works on multiple individual contracts, that sales force salary cannot be incremental at the individual contract level. But if the sales force is limited to working only on a portfolio, the sales force salaries could be incremental at the portfolio level because all of that pay is related to activities related to originating contracts at the portfolio. So you could end up with different costs being capitalized depending on whether it's incremental at the individual or portfolio level.
If it was variable. So if it had a fixed salary to those individuals, it would be considered direct but not incremental. So I agree at the direct level you get a different answer portfolio, but if it's purely incremental, which means you only get the compensation if you sold the contract. So you'd have to say 100% variability, then you wouldn't get a different answer. But if there's a fixed salary, that's not incremental the way we defined it earlier today.
That's not what I disagree with that, Ross, because
okay.
Can I finish the explanation?
Yes.
All right. Go ahead, Leslie.
I think that the threshold question here is whether you want to only capitalize successful efforts. If you are of that view, then you might say, I only want the incremental costs, which I think are variable. If you think that's too narrow, then you probably want to add the word direct. In your example having to do with salaries, then you would need to do an allocation to say, of these directly related costs to successful efforts, I need to allocate the piece that of the salary that yielded a contract or contracts and the piece that did not. So I view these as very interrelated. It's hard for me to parse it into the questions. So it seems to me if you want to agree with the staff recommendation, you're saying evaluate this at the portfolio level, limit it to successful contracts, which means incremental and directly related to successful efforts.
Can I clarify just a little further? Because I don't disagree with anything you just said, nor with what Tom said, However, if we're going to use that thought process, then if all of the salespeople have cars in order to travel to the different potential clients, does that include a portion of those cars? And if so, then does it include a portion of the space that they rent for the salespeople? Where do we stop in this? That's what I'm having some difficulty with.
Right. That's where I think the question about the implementation guidance that goes to the activities that are going to be inbound is important.
Okay, but that implementation guidance, I mean, just to clarify, is probably going to be somewhat rule based.
I don't have a
problem with that.
Is the revenue team still there?
I'm still here.
In Larry's fact pattern of the insurance agent, an employee of the insurance company, has a car, and they drive the car around, and they get the car whether they sell one item or 100 items. If that was a sales force at a high tech company, would any of the car be capitalizable under what we voted on earlier today?
No.
So why would we want to make that capitalizable under insurance?
It's a totally different model we're going down, Russ. Once you make a decision that you want to do this on a portfolio basis, and we're making that decision because the entire unit of account that we're dealing with in insurance is a portfolio basis, if we're going to go down that route, it's a totally different model.
Well, if you look at paragraph 42. Go ahead.
Yep, go ahead, Leslie.
I was just going to suggest that if we look at paragraph 42 and 43, it really comes down to what we're going to consider direct and what we're going to consider indirect. So, for example, rent is not ever going to be part of this allocation. And so, you know, is the car yes or no? I mean, we're going to have to answer that.
And, Larry, I guess my view is that I realize this is a liability measurement model, but the liability is to fulfill the obligation to the customer. I don't see the cost incurred to sell the product to the customer should at all impact the measurement of the liability. I think these costs are deferrable costs. They should be treated as an asset, and they should have the same accounting as revenue. So that leads me to alternative one.
What's alternative one?
Alternative one is incremental at the contract level. I think if you take a pure incremental approach, I do not think there's a different answer between contract and portfolio. I recognize Jennifer's point that we probably need to be clear to change some of the historical practices, but I just don't view acquisition costs as being different between an insurance activity and a regular revenue activity. I don't think the measurement of the liability model should impact it.
Russ, I agree with you, including alternative one, but I also want to raise a practical concern I have. If we capitalize all of those costs or include all those costs in the insurance contract liability as an outflow, when do we say those costs, that liability, or the cost in that liability is settled? Because as you move along in the insurance liability, we say we build up the cost in the outflow. We settle the liability when we do administration and or we pay out the insurance. That causes the outflow or the liability to go down. When does the liability go down? When we include costs related to acquisition activities in the liability. When is that settled?
That's my point. I would not put in the liability. I don't think this is the definition of the building blocks. I don't think this is an inflow from a customer or an outflow for the fulfillment. I think it's an asset that should be amortized over the life of the contract, just like we're doing in revenue.
But that's not alternative one. That's one primed.
Right. Okay, I would like to try and bring some order to this conversation, please. I'm going to ask you, so it seems to me that in the questions, you have explicitly answered question A, No. Because
yes.
You're saying don't include it in the liability measurement. And then B?
B, I've answered alternative one.
Okay. And then C?
Yes. Think
it's, yes. Okay. Mark?
Okay. I think we're overplaying the consistency we think we're going to have with revenue recognition. I think it's a completely different model. I think in revenue recognition, we made a decision on incremental, which is, as Russ was just pointing out, is deferring and amortizing. And in here, none of the recommendations were to do that. They were to include it in the cash flow. So I don't think we're consistent right from the get-go on something that's extremely important. I think we should be... you know, if we wanted to be consistent, I think we could either defer them all, as Russ has suggested, or expense them all. And if we're not going to expense them all, then I think we're going to be we're not going to necessarily be consistent. I wouldn't disagree with Russ's approach. If we're going to put them all on the balance sheet, putting them all on the balance sheet and burying it within a liability number probably does more to obfuscate what's going on than deferring it like we have today. But let me get specifically. I think we should only be dealing with successful efforts. I think that's all that should be capitalized if we're gonna capitalize anything. I think what we've seen in this country anyway is that the implementation of just purely incremental has resulted in everything from TV commercials to lots of other things being capitalized, and I think we've got to be really careful about that, as others have said. So I think I would limit it to successful. Efforts. I think that, you know, I was going to answer that we can put it in the cash flows, but if there's an appetite to think about deferring it and putting it on an asset, I would I wouldn't object to that. For question B, I would do alternative two, and I think we definitely need implementation guides.
Okay. Thank you. Larry?
Okay. First of all, I agree with what Mark said. I don't think this has anything to do with revenue recognition anymore. So to try to tie it to it, I would not. That being said, I hope we all remember this when we go to how we should be presenting the income statement on this. But that's a topic of a future day. I guess where I am is I would definitely be that it has to be based upon successful efforts. On the second issue would be alternative two. Whether that gets described as direct or direct and incremental, I'm not quite sure, because when you're dealing at a portfolio level, I think it muddies it up. So I think I agree with how Tom was explaining it earlier. And I think we need very strong implementation guidance, because I can clearly see people taking this and you know, interpreting the word direct to be quite a few things. And if we don't feel comfortable with that, we have to articulate what things we feel uncomfortable with, and we have to be able to say why. Because I'm not really clear as to why it's okay to include the salesman's salary but not the car that they're driving around. So I don't know what the dividing line is and the rationale for it. So I think that's something that needs to be brought out or brought back to us for further discussion.
Okay. Tom?
I agree that we have two different models here, but I'm struggling deeply as to whether that warrants any difference in how we handle contract cost of obtaining a contract, and my conclusion is no. I think what we're struggling with when we work through adding an additional cost, which I think Leslie, you hit it on the head, in part when you move to the word direct, you're allowing to move in more overhead and allocating overhead amongst portfolios, where incremental often would not allow you to put overhead in unless it was just isolated on one portfolio at the portfolio level. But I think what we're struggling is to try to expand the costs that we put into the contract, both unsuccessful and direct, so such that we include all the costs that are recoverable in the price of the contract. And I don't think if we really want to include all the costs that are recoverable in the price of the contract, we got to go far beyond direct acquisition costs and unsuccessful efforts. We'd have to include all indirect costs and all overheads, and I'm not willing to go that far remotely within this model. So I go back to say that I would rather want successful efforts. I'm like Russ, an alternative one prime, because if I'm not going to include all the costs that are covered in the price, indirect and not just obtaining contract, I want some discipline in this to be similar to revenue recognition, even though it's not the same model, therefore allowing the margin to have some period costs flowing through in each period in the margin and just other costs that are directly related to settling or administering the contract being the outflows and the deferred acquisition costs being in an asset category or in the net asset sort of notion. So that's where I'm at, but it's a different argument.
Okay. Well, where I am is that I'm fine with looking at this at the portfolio level. I think that the cost that should be eligible for deferral should relate to direct and incremental, or incremental including direct and incremental costs related to successful acquisitions of contracts. And so, Jennifer, you tell me, is that alternative two or alternative three? But like some of the others have expressed, to me, this is not unique to insurance, even though we're looking at it at the portfolio level. You look at very, very similar issues in loan acquisitions or loan underwriting, which you know, are also accumulations of portfolio at some point. So, I do not believe that means we need to include it in the cash flows of the liability. This is sort of a man-made creation or woman-made creation we're doing here. Of course, historically, it's never been viewed that way in the U.S. anyway. We did a deferral as an asset, which would be fine with me at this point. But I know I lost that battle last time. And I think we do need implementation guidance to get at which are the activities whose costs would get into this bucket.
So can I ask a question? Is that consistent with what Mark and I said?
I think it generally is. The one thing is when I say direct, I don't ever mean overhead. So none of my allocations would be anything related that is not specifically related to obtaining successful contracts.
Okay.
Does that mean Salesforce salaries are excluded?
No. No, you would do an allocation of those.
Well, that's, yeah. I thought that's what you meant. I would view that as overhead because it's fixed.
Okay. Back to you, Steve.
Can I ask a clarifying question, Leslie? I mean, I heard you say that at least for the first question, you would disagree that it would go in the measurement of the insurance contract.
I do. I disagree with that. I always have.
So that's three, me, Tom, and you.
Mark said he'd agree.
Yeah.
Well, I said I wouldn't object. If we as a converged two boards have the appetite to go that way, I think that would be great. I don't know that I would, create a new difference in the model if the ISB is not willing to go that way.
Exactly. I mean, to me, it's not necessarily a dissentable issue. The point I was trying to make was don't use it as an excuse to look at the cost differently.
Okay.
Well, but, Russ, you and I differ from Mark and Leslie in terms of, I think, what cost we'd put into the asset. You and I would only have incremental at the individual level, and I think Leslie certainly was at the portfolio level and direct. And Mark, I don't recall what your cost component was.
It was with Leslie. I was in agreement with Leslie.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Well, we're going to take some votes and see if we can give the staff some guidance on this. Let's start off with the staff's question A on page 17. So that's the recommendation to continue with what we had in the ED and not to have a separate deferred acquisition cost. And then we'll go on to B, which I'm going to split up into three different components, and then C, which we'll ask separately, all right? So those of you in London who support A, you indicate support the staff recommendation in, this is question A at the bottom of page 17, staff recommendation that some acquisition costs should be included in the measure of the insurance contracts as contractual cash flows. So this is what we had in the exposure draft. So that's a very broad question, but I'm putting the staff questions as the staff questions are put, and then we'll come on to the alternative A, B, and C, and all the rest of it. Okay? Right. So to question. Okay. So
you left out the first three words.
A contract issued.
Yes, that's successful.
Can't hear what someone's saying. Whoever that is.
Okay, let's put Paul on. Paul was saying that, Paul, the first three words are important to you in this question. He's on already.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Well, if you're asking me to vote on the staff question, I read all the words in the question. The first three words say four contracts issued. That tells me you're only talking about successful contracts. And if that's the question, I vote yes. If it's all portfolio, including unsuccessful efforts, I vote no.
Okay, well, let's remove those three words because we're going to deal with successful and unsuccessful secondly. So the principle is, should acquisition costs be included in the contract cash flows or should they be separately capitalized as an asset? Oh,
that's the choice.
Okay. All right, and then we'll come on to successful in the second part of the question. So who agrees with the staff recommendation as modified?
Steve, unfortunately, I can't answer this question because it's related to the presentation issue. We haven't discussed yet.
Let's, okay, I understand, sure. Tatsumi. Let's continue with this as the staff has put it. All of this is tentative, and I'm sure the staff are going to have to decipher all of this and come back anyway. So let's carry on, and who in London would agree with that first part of the question? Okay, so we have all apart from Philippe and Paul here. Let's go through the phones then. I'm conscious of the time, and Elka's got to go very soon, and I'm sure others have as well. So I think we're not going to, if we start going through this, we're going to take forever, and I think it's going to probably come back anyway. John. Part A of the question, bottom of page 17.
I prefer a separate asset, but I won't object to what we did before.
Okay, thanks. PK?
I say yes, but I want to be very clear. A portfolio for me means an accumulation of contracts that have been written up, not a portfolio of successful and unsuccessful contracts. When I say portfolio, I mean it is successful contract.
That's the next question. Tatsumi?
Abstain, please.
Okay, Warren?
I support the staff recommendation.
Okay, so we have support for that, but qualified support given all the other complications. All right, let's go to the next question. And who supports looking at the cost at a portfolio level? Now, we'll come on to the separate question of direct or incremental, or direct and incremental, but who thinks that we should move to looking at this at a portfolio level? Those that support looking at it at a portfolio level in London is six of us, and Paul disagrees. And John?
I'm okay with it, but, well, I'm okay with it.
Okay, PK?
I'm okay with it because of the model that we have, but I want to understand what a portfolio means. Portfolio means successful contracts only.
That's the other part.
All right, we're coming on to that. That's the next bit. Tatsumi?
I support staff recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Warren?
Support staff recommendation.
Okay, do you want to do successful next or the direct, the incremental and direct next? Okay, let's do the either incremental only or direct and incremental.
So can I just clarify before we take this vote? Tom made a point about the salaries of staff that might be involved in underwriting, acquiring contracts, whatever. And I think he made a very valid point that we need to be clear about whether those are included, however you describe it, incremental or direct and incremental, or whether they're excluded. From a personal viewpoint, I think they should be included. So I think we need to get a description of that particular approach, however the staff want to describe it.
I think, Warren, I think it has to be described as direct.
Give
the staff an opportunity to come and give us a clear description of what is meant by incremental, what is meant by direct and incremental, that we can hopefully be clear what we're voting on.
To clarify, we tried to, the recommendation, although it wasn't written and this was our clarification, is that it would be direct, which would include incremental and direct costs. And the direct would be the salaries of underwriters, and then the incremental is obviously those costs such as bonuses and commission checks, etc. The direct also is just those that are directly close to touching the policyholder and handling the contract, so it would not include all of the overhead, rent, etc., but would include, like I said, the underwriter salary, the policy issuance folks, the medical and inspection, and the direct selling. I'm not sure if that's
helpful. Okay, that's helpful.
So if I could summarize that, direct and incremental means salaries only. Incremental without direct means the cars, the rent, and everything else.
So hold on, say that again. Direct and
incremental.
Come again, Andrea?
The direct and incremental means the salaries only. Only incremental without direct implies the cars, the rent, and all the other associated costs. That would be the distinction.
I don't think that's how it works.
Okay, let me have Velka come in.
May I? At least I am now confused on a higher level, and may I therefore suggest that staff discusses what they mean by direct and incremental first. My assumption was so far that incremental costs to a portfolio are those costs that I wouldn't have incurred if I hadn't written that portfolio.
Yeah.
And so that solves for my understanding also the question of successful or not successful.
Yeah.
As I'm linking it to a portfolio, and I'm making it the cost related to that portfolio. If I haven't got a portfolio, I haven't got something to expense to put into this cash flow. If that assumption is not correct, then I'm at least at a loss, and I would like staff to clarify for me at least what they mean by incremental or direct.
So, Elka, what Jennifer described a second ago, which included the salaries, do you interpret that to mean incremental?
I would include the salaries as being part of the incremental cost.
Okay, so I think what you're describing as incremental is what Jennifer was describing as direct and incremental.
But my question,
a bit like that, yeah. And I would not include the rent because I would have the rent as well if I haven't got it.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. Jennifer's going to describe it one more time, and then we're going to vote yes or no on what Jennifer has just said. Okay, Jennifer, can you say it one more time, and then we're going to vote on what Jennifer
I will attempt to, although I know there's lots of questions around this. So the incremental costs, the reason, and I guess I'll add a little verbiage around it, so I apologize, Steve. The reason for not just saying incremental is some would view that as how many underwriters do I need to have a base operation, and then what's incremental and above that for selling additional contracts. So that is why we said for underwriter salaries and policy issuance that those would be direct costs, which would be their salaries, specific. So that's where that direct. The incremental costs are incremental for such things such as commissions and bonuses. Also, the direct cost does try to eliminate the rent and all of the overhead. That's why we've also split out successful and unsuccessful as a separate issue, because incremental and direct is not always tied to successful contracts in some of how industry has interpreted it. I don't know if that helped clarify it, Steve. If not, let me know.
Well, let's see. So who agrees that we should go with the direct and incremental as just described? Who would vote for that? Okay, we've got four here and three no's. John?
I'm okay. It doesn't include overhead, right?
It doesn't include overhead, no. PK?
It doesn't. I'm still very unclear, so I vote no for the time being.
Okay. Tatsumi?
Incremental, please.
Incremental only?
Yes, only. Yes, please.
So you don't agree with what Jennifer just said?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Warren?
I agree with what Jennifer said.
Okay. I'm not talking about these accurately.
Where does that leave us, Steve?
I think that leaves us... Well, we're slightly down on numbers anyway, but that's a pretty close call. I think there's a slight majority in favor of what Jennifer said, but I don't think it's a definitive decision. We're going to have to bring this back anyway after the staff have clarified it. But let's just try last two. So the next one is successful versus all. And the staff recommendation is successful, as described by Jennifer, whether you call it an allocation or whatever, it's successful only. So let's put that question. Who would support the staff recommendation that it should only apply to successfully acquired contracts? And we have four. So, yeah, is it only apply to successful? So who would vote for only limiting this to successful? So that's four in favor, two against, and Elkhard, she gave you what she wanted?
She wants both.
She wants both. Okay, so that's four for successful and three for all contracts. Let's go to all contracts in the portfolio. Let's go to John.
Successful.
And PK?
Successful.
And Tatsumi?
All, please.
And Warren?
Both successful and unsuccessful.
Okay, so I make that 6-5. I was for all.
Now six to six.
There was 6-5, but
7-6.
Obviously David and Amaro gave us the benefit of their views before hearing the debate. I mean, their view was that it should be all, but I think we can only take all of this is indicative anyway. Is it worth
Stephen,
the last
6-5? 6-5 which way?
It was 6-5 in favor of successful.
But when you add in David and Amaro, that's 8-5, right?
Yeah, but, well, no, it would become 6-7, so it would be 6 for successful and 7 for all if we add in David and Amaro. But I think we can only take all of this as indicative, as they haven't had the benefit of the debate.
Steve, whether this
means... Okay, let me just do the last one. And do you think we need guidance?
I wish I could see your faces.
Absolutely not. Joking.
So, Steve, are we all done?
I think we'll leave that. Okay, we've run well over time, so I hope people didn't have pressing things. I know Elka's just gone. but I think we'll call it a day here. I think we've given staff something to think about and at least some indications. We do need to talk briefly about 3A, though. Have we got time to do something on that? Peter, you wanted to say something about it. Leslie, is that okay? I know we've ran well over time on this, but...
I think it's okay. Is everybody, does anyone have anywhere to go?
Given that it's 25 to 5 in the morning to bed for me, but yeah, I would, if you just want to spend a few minutes on the paper, that's fine, but let's be quick.
Warren, I think Peter's view is that we should leave this until the meeting in 2 weeks' time.
Yep, that's fine.
I mean,
how could I disagree with that? It's
time to a long discussion about it, so it would only be sort of Peter making a statement, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I think we need to bring it back, probably.
Okay. The decision is we're going to bring it back. Is that okay, Leslie?
That's fine. Steve, thank you very much for chairing the meeting. That was very difficult, but I think we made some progress.
Okay.
Yeah, well done. Well done, Steve. It was good.
All right, thanks, everybody.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, staff. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah.